It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
My guest is definitely a tower of power. He's Grammy and Emmy nominated trumpeter and arranger Greg Adams, whose sound is one of the most recognized in the world. A founding member of Tower of Power, Greg's legendary horn arrangements helped define the band's signature style and fueled collaborations with music royalty from Elton John and Santana to Madonna and the Rolling Stones. Now, with more than 3,000 recordings, multiple gold and platinum albums, and a career spanning 5 decades, Greg now brings his powerhouse blend of funk, jazz, soul, and R&B to Myron's Cabaret at the Smith Center, August the 22nd at 7 p.m. with his band East Bay Soul. For ticket information, go to thesmithcenter.com. For everything about Greg, go to gregadamsmusic.com, and you can follow him on Facebook, X, and YouTube, and also East Bay as well, correct?
EastBaySoul.com.
EastBaySoul.com. Yes. I was going to get the second part, but I was in a rhythm. Glad you finished it for me.
You're good.
Greg, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Ira. It's nice to be here with you.
Thank you. So what is it about you and music?
Well, you know, I began very young, and I had a passion for it even as a little boy. And so I learned to play around about 10 years old. And I got into school, you know, junior high school bands and high school bands. And we had a great jazz band at the high school I attended in Daly City, California. It's Westmore High School. And in my last 2 years, junior and senior year, I was exhibiting a talent, I guess, a knack for arranging. And we had a really good jazz band. And my band teacher just said, well, why don't you just take over the band and write for it and learn from your mistakes. So I really am self-taught, but I had a really good band, and the guys are still some of my closest friends from high school. And I graduated in 1970. So it was a while ago, but one of the guys that played in that jazz band with me is still, he's in East Bay Soul. He's the baritone sax player, Johnny Beaumont. And he plays alto and tenor also. So we've known each other that long. But I kind of, the San Francisco music scene, you know, in the late 60s and into the 70s was pretty ripe and a fertile ground for a lot of great musicians. And so I joined, I got with Tower of Power, on the first record, East Bay Grease, and mm-hmm. They had a horn section, but they had lost one of their members, and they knew, they'd heard of me, and I had an arranging ability, and they needed a little help. I think they I'll just say that. And so I came in on the first album, East Bay Grease, and from then on, it was kind of, that's where I stayed. I was going to go to Berklee School of Music, but I opted for a chance to get a recording career and travel the world. And, you know, hopefully, you know, you hope for that after you go to school for 5 years. And while I was being presented an opportunity, I thought, of a lifetime. And as it turned out, it was the opportunity of a lifetime. And like you said, I've worked with everybody. It seems like we were just talking the other day how the horn section was becoming known for its recording sessions with other artists. I knew Linda Ronstadt, and she turned us on to Gus Dudgeon, the producer who was Elton John's producer at the time. So that's how she got us the Caribou sessions with Elton.
Very nice.
And that really opened the floodgates. I mean, we were just working like crazy, 3, 4, 5 days a week. A lot of it, most of it at the record plant in Sausalito, California. But people were coming to us, you know, flying up from LA or out from New York to Sausalito to do the horns. And we kind of decided one day, you know, we got to move to LA because we're missing out on a lot of stuff, you know, because not everybody's going to be able to fly up. So we needed to go to Mecca, you know. here we are, and we've lived in LA now for several years, and I think about 40 years or so.
That would be more than several, Greg. Yes, I think.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Anyway, so I still do a lot of sessions, and I have the East Bay Soul Band is a great band. We've been together for several years now. We've got five or six records out, one being even a Christmas record that we did years
nice.
Ago. And yeah, it's a great band, great players. It's kind of ironic because there are two more of us, myself and the keyboard player Nick Milo, and our drummer Herman Matthews, are both alumni from Tower of Power also. So we managed to kind of pull that sound a little bit. I mean, you know, I've since the Tower of Power is known for the horn section, I think as much as the singer, maybe even more, because it was a signature sound. Well, I created that, and I'm very proud of that. And I was able to because of that sound, we could work with a lot of people. And I was fortunate enough to be, as an arranger, to be chameleon-like, so I could kind of form our sound or my sound to envelop the singer and without having to really change my style. They would come to me and say, no, no, Greg, do what you do. And I think one of the most important things that I've done in my career is my motto is never step on the singer. You know,
yeah, like
let the singer breathe, just coddle him or her along. And I think that's a secret to my success, because, you know, when you're young, you're full of PNV and you're out to save the world, you know, and usually when you're younger, you write a lot of notes. And I got that out of my system early. A lot of that Tower of Power stuff was pretty complicated and a lot of syncopation and all over the place. But I never stepped on the singer. But as I've grown old, I think, you know, less is more. You after you speak the language of music for so many years, it's just like any other language, which music is a language. I tend to say more with less notes than I have, you know. I try to, because, you know, people, stuff goes over people's heads, you know, and a lot of times Nelson Riddle, a famous music arranger who did most of Frank Sinatra's stuff, who I idolize, he's one of the best arrangers ever. He his whole thing was never to get in the way of the singer, and I learned that real early. And so, you know, it's been a great career for me. Like I said, playing at Myron's, this will be our second time, and what a great club that is. I mean, I really, yes, really enjoyed it, and the staff and crew and everything was just so top notch. So we're really looking forward to going back. You know, it's a great hang and a great theater to play in without being in a casino, you know.
Sure. So, it's August 22nd at 7 p.m. at the Swiss.
Yeah.
And also what's great is that it's a hop, skip, and a jump for you. You don't have to fly across the country.
True. You know, we just go to Burbank and hop on the Southwest. And we're there in, I guess, about 45 minutes. It's pretty quick. I hear you guys have been having a lot of hot weather, though.
Yeah, a little too much hot. Yes, I've been a long time, and this has been one of the hotter ones. So, yes.
Yeah, it's been hot here in L.A., too. So we're trying to stay indoors. Yeah.
Something struck me as you were talking, and that is this, and maybe you're the right person to ask the question of. I mentioned in the opening about some of the legends you've worked with, and it's an extensive list. If you want to go to his website, to your Greg's website, I think that's the best way to see all, gregmusic.com. But because you're in that world, and yet at the same time, you and other musicians I've talked with over the decades, because I've been doing this a long time, musicians are an interesting group of people. And what I mean by that is they have a rhythm of their own. I'll use that term. You'll know what I mean. But at the same time, very much down to earth. They're not swayed by the celebrity or the star aspect of entertainment. They're there to do a job. They do it well. They record well. They perform in front of a live audience, as you mentioned, protecting the singer well. And yet it doesn't, the limelight doesn't seem to affect a lot of you, even though you're in the limelight on stage, as it does with, say, a solo singer or any other kind of performer that gets up on stage. Is there a reason for that?
Well, you know, I think it's you become, I think we, you know, the first time I did a recording session with, I don't know who it was. It's been so long. Maybe there's a touch of that. Ooh, wow, I'm going to meet, you know, Dionne Warwick the gals from Heart. You know,
Frank Sinatra, when you're working as a band with Nelson Riddle and you're in Capitol Records studio and there, but or even on stage, especially in Las Vegas. So, for example, when Sinatra would come to perform in Las Vegas, and I'm using him just as an example, that you'd have all these musicians that would play with him, some of them handpicked and the rest they'd pick up from local musicians here. Mm-hmm. But the point is you're playing for a legend and somehow have to maintain your professionalism and
the lights are off,
you go back to doing other stuff.
Well, the thing is, it's like, I think that's the whole part of being a professional musician is not letting that kind of stuff affect you in a way that is going to hamper your performance. You're there to support and do your best for that artist. And that's why you've been called. And I'm always very proud when I get a call from someone really big. And I've worked with a lot of big ones. And I'll admit, you know, if somebody big still calls, I'm wow. When Celine Dion called, we were okay. This is
absolutely,
you know, and so.
But Greg, also too, that you perform on stage with the band.
I wear two hats, you know.
Yeah,
I'm a studio guy and I'm a live guy, and I've been playing live since I was 16 years old, and even before that, if you count playing on stage with in performances with a school band, I mean that's performance, you know. That's
Salvation Army too.
That's where I learned. That's where I learned to play. I went to band camp every summer, and I really picked up the horn when I was 5 years old, and I dragged it around for about 5 years. So I started to really get a sound out of it. Man, it was like a duck to water. I mean, I just was kind of a natural, and I enjoyed it. And I learned my music theory at band camp. And I just had this thing that kind of blossomed. My parents were musicians. And so it just, here I am, you know. And I think that one of the reasons, going back to what, you know, the people that you work with, I did a session with with Al Schmidt, the late Al Schmidt, and he was a dear friend of ours, and I'm pretty sure, I'm almost positive that this is his last recording session, and the band was Leland Sklar and on bass, and Whitey Wachtel on guitar, and John Batiste on Hammond organ, who it was the band leader for Colbert. And has gone on to several Grammys, and he's a great guy. And I'd never met him. And it was a turkey of a, it was a Lincoln Mercury ad, of all things. But the client wanted to get a heavy hitter band, and it was a three-piece horn section with Andy Martin on trombone Dan, I can't remember his name. I blank out. I guess I'm getting old.
You're fine.
Dan on reeds and John, and just a great band. I mean, killer. And I'd never met John Batiste, and I was admired him. And since I had a lot to do with the David Letterman show, and Colbert moved into the Ed Sullivan Theater, and I always, you know, I just kind of have a affinity for those kind of shows, because you know what it's all about. And when David retired, you know, and that whole thing went away. And, you know, that band, Paul and the band went away. And so, but you still stick to the format. So it was great to meet him. And I when I met him, I told him, I said, "Hello, John, I'm Greg Adams. I used to play as the arranger for Tower of Power." And he went, "Yeah." So he was starstruck with me. I was completely thrown aback by that. And we did it at Capital A, Al Schmidt's studio, which I've done hundreds of dates in that studio. And that's the legendary room where Frank Sinatra recorded most of everything that he did with Nelson Riddle and Gordon Jenkins and Billy May and all those cats. And all that stuff was totally live, you know, I mean. And we did this session with Sklar and all the cats live. And it was kind of and everybody was, I guess, kind of funny. It was a great, great payday because of the heavy hitters and all that. It's kind of like a favored nations. You know, everybody made the same amount of money. And the guy who makes most of the amount of money, well, they matched it with all of us. So anyway, it was triple what we usually get. And then I got my arrangement fee and this and that. And, you know, that ad never aired. It never aired. It was for television. It was some singer won a contest and it was going to be a big talent show. You know, so sometimes, you know, there's flops in this business. There's a lot of flops, you know, but
maybe it'll show up in YouTube.
You know, I don't think it did at all. They filmed it and there were more grips and cameramen in the room than there were musicians. I mean, it was extensive film. And so anyway, sometimes you hit it, sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
Now, like I was saying, it's about working with the people that you work with. And because you get, I guess you get kind of become a nerd because you, oh, okay, well, you know, so we're here to do a job, you know, and you can't act like a Nelly around the artists because they'll be uncomfortable too, you know? So you have to like, hey, we're all in the same room. We all tie our shoelaces the same way and let's get this job done. And thanks a lot for the call and hope to see you next time. And usually do, if you do a good job, you know, you're always as good as your last job. But one of the funny things, first time I worked with Quincy Jones, it was for the Brothers Johnson. And we done a little touring Tower of Power with Quincy. He had about a 12-piece band, and we opened for him. It was a great show, Tower of Power and Quincy Jones. So anyway, after that tour was over, we got a call, and it was for the Brothers Johnson. And I went over to A&M to meet with Quincy, and now that was somebody that I was impressed with because of on his level. He's the kind of guy I am, like behind the scenes. He's a producer and an arranger and a composer. And I, that guy, really admired him, like Nelson Riddle, you know? And so great. I mean, I get to work with Quincy Jones, play some of his arrangements. And I get there and we're in the studio listening to the tracks. And I said, "So when do you want to do this?" He says, "Well, whenever you're ready." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, you're doing the writing. I'm not doing the writing. I didn't call you to write my stuff. I called you to write your stuff because I want your sound."
Right.
So I was flattered beyond belief. And so we did that project together, and it was really great. One thing that afternoon, we had gone back to his office. He had an office on A&M lot here in Hollywood, and we were talking this and that and little stories, and there's a knock on the door, and in walks Lou Gossett Jr. And it was just around the time that Officer and a Gentleman was out. And so he was pretty hot stuff. And now I was impressed. Lou Gossett. Movie stars can impress you. We just met Kim Basinger at a sushi bar not long ago. And I told her that I had played on a soundtrack that was really one of my favorite movies that not only to have played on, but to have watched for so many times. It's called L.A. Confidential. And so we struck up a conversation, and she mentioned to my wife, Andrea, that she really liked the way she was dressed. And we just stuck, And we looked at her and, hey, you're her, huh? And she was so cool. And her boyfriend was with her. And we had a great dinner. There was nothing. It was just four people talking, having a conversation. And I think she really appreciated it. Nobody's going, autograph, can we take a picture? No. So,
well, as you said earlier, Greg, we all tie our shoelaces the same way. So
that's right. And she's as beautiful today as she was when she was in that movie, and just a sweetheart. So anyway, Lou Gossett walks in Quincy's office and he says, "Hey, you guys want to go get some lunch?" And it's Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles up the street from A&M over on
La Brea.
It's near the. It's off. It's one of those side streets near Capitol, off Sunset. Anyway, so lunchtime at Roscoe's. I mean, it's a soul food restaurant. You know, fried chicken and waffles, and the line goes out the door and around the corner at noon. I mean, you just have to wait your turn. Well, this Oreo cookie, me being the cream center, we walk right to the front door and went. Right in, and it was pretty cool. I was with royalty that day, so that was good.
Exactly. Well, you've had such an incredible career. If I had asked you to narrow down, if you could, and if you can't, I understand totally. Do you have a favorite album? Do you have a favorite performance? Do you have a favorite performer you work with? Any of those three or all three?
Lena Ronstadt is a real favorite of mine, the album that we did, Cry Like a Rainstorm, Howl Like the Wind, I'm bad with titles. And it was a big duets record with her and Aaron Neville. And so I did several arrangements on that record, and that was great. I did a big arrangement for the When Something's Wrong with My Baby, and it was like a 94-piece orchestra that I'd written for. And so that was a thrill. Tower of Power, I love the Back to Oakland record a lot, and it has withstood the test of time. And I'm Below Us All the City Lights. Anything with an orchestra, I'm a slave to that, because I love writing for strings and horns and all that kind of stuff. Just as my boy, let me add it, you know. So
sure.
We did several big orchestra tracks on that record. And so that's a real favorite of mine. And it's kind of ironic because we're now, we've categorized and we're selling my arrangements. We have a website called gregadamsarrangements.com.
gregadamsarrangements.com. Got it.
I'm selling them the original scores. They've been in a fireproof safe for decades, and I figure, you know, it's my legacy, and I'd like to find a nice home for it. So if anybody would be interested, you can go and check it out. And the original score for What Is Hip, Below Us All the City Lights, all kinds of goodies in there, and so I've sold a few of them now, and that's kind of cool. You know, I enjoyed working with Lyle Lovett. He was a great one to work with. I worked with another great that wanted me to do the writing was George Martin. I mean, we did America, the group America together, and also kind of a turkey of a movie, but it was an opportunity to work with the Bee Gees and Peter Frampton, which I later worked on another album with Peter, but George Martin was just a great, great person to work with. And that really stands out. Now that's royalty, you know?
Absolutely.
I think I'd probably freak out a little bit. Wouldn't freak out, but you know, back in the day, if you were to meet a Beatle, that'd be pretty cool. I never worked with any of those guys. We were at Universal Amphitheater to play with the horn section, to play with the Eurythmics years ago. And George showed up. And he, not George Martin, but George the Beatle.
Right. And, that's who you're mentioning. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't speak to him, but he came up to my wife, Andrea, and said, "Oh, I love your coat. It's a beautiful color." And Andrea's standing like,
that's the kind of thing you remember forever.
Yeah.
Is the way it is.
You know, there's so many different instances where we've had great moments, you know, and sometimes they're not such great moments. I mean, I haven't hit it out of the park every time. There's been a couple of times when it just didn't work, you know. And so,
but that's life.
We won't talk about that.
No, that's fine. Hey, we got a minute or two left. What are you going to be bringing to the Smith Center?
Well, you know, we have our latest record is called The Real, and we have a great singer, Terrell Edwards, and he's just fabulous. It's a great band. It's four piece horn section, a four piece rhythm section with great, great cats. I mean, I can say I've played with some of the best musicians in the world, and these guys are some of the best, if not the best, that I've played with. And it's such a great chemistry with musically and just, you know, get along guys. You know, I mean, we laugh, we do all kinds of great stuff together, and we get to have a lot of great moments on stage. You know, we let things kind of develop and things like, it's just musically, it's a wonderful trip. And we're just, like I said, we're so happy to be coming back, because sometimes, you know, we play nice places, but this is a really nice place to play. And if I were going to go see live music, I would go there definitely if I was in Las Vegas, because it's such a beautiful venue, you know, and we so appreciate people that come out and dig live music. And that's why we're there, you know, to play for you. And I've been told that we're almost sold out. So there are a few tickets left. So I'll say, just get on it and get it, because you don't want to miss this show. We it's kind of funny. Annually, we usually go to like Seattle and Oakland, the Yoshi's and Jazz Alley. And we have our places that we play four times a year, once a year, twice a year. And it's funny. It's been like a year and a half or more than we played at Myron's.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird, because it was, well, what? Let's go back there. Come on. We like that place.
Yeah. This is going to be, I think, a regular thing for you after this one. So you can.
Yeah, I hope so. We did really well last time too. Yeah. And so we hope all the folks come out there. They're able to make the show, and we hope they have a great time. So I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you, and we'll see you at the club.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Greg Adams, who brings his powerhouse blend of funk, jazz, soul, and R&B to Myron's Cabaret at the Smith Center, August 22nd. And that's at 7 p.m. with his band, East Bay Soul. For ticket information, go to thesmithcenter.com. For everything about Greg, go to gregadamsmusic.com. You can follow him on Facebook, X, and YouTube. And also, we should point out about gregadamsarrangements.com. And also your band, which is, Greg, I'll let you do the honors.
Well, let me see. Terrell Edwards, Herman Matthews, Nick Milo, Michael Stever, Ed Wynn, Johnny Beaumont, Herman Matthews, and Del Atkins. The Cats. You got to come and see the Cats. East Bay Soul, baby.
Greg, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks.
See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Yeah,